On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we preview the American League West. How bad are the Angels going to be? Depends on Mike Trout. Where are the A's playing? YOLO. Are the Texas Rangers going to win the World Series? I kind of think so. Is there a reason to believe in the Mariners? Not according to me. Are the Astros going to keep this thing rolling? Only God knows. All that and a lot more on this episode, Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world. A little bit low on the Los Angeles Angels. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and jail me for such a take.
We're the only ones doubting the team with the longest postseason drought in baseball, as this episode of Baseball Barbacast will feature our sixth and final division preview, the AL West. I am excited for this episode. We have plenty to talk about with these five teams. We are, as always, going to go worst to first. The order, the projected order is interesting according to Fangraphs. We're going to shuffle it at least a little bit, but I'm excited. These five teams give us a lot to talk about in podcast form.
This is not the best division in the sport, but it will be our best division preview. I can guarantee you that. And we will begin in Southern California with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, Los Angeles Anaheim.
That's them.
Last year, what happened to them? They were a disaster. They barely avoided 100 losses. They won 63 games, winning 63-99. The over-under was 72.5. We both took the under because,
we know ball. And this team deserves whatever the opposite of the benefit of the doubt is. That is the Angels, as they now have the longest postseason drought in baseball. Since the Tigers won again, the Tigers back in October, putting the spotlight on the Angels as the team that has gone the longest without October baseball, which is tough when you have had two of the greatest players of all time on your team. But such is the nature of this franchise. Yeah, last year they were awful. It was the worst team in franchise history. They, again, not 100 losses. They managed to squeak out some wins against the White Sox at the end of the year to avoid 100 losses. They made some decent trades. I would say they actually got some good pieces back at the deadline when they traded Carlos Estevez and Luis Garcia, but still just terrible. So, however, with another terrible season in Anaheim, how do they respond to that?
Well, we should say that terrible season was hopeful enough to get another year on the contract of general manager, president of baseball operations, one of those two, Perry Minasian. And so there was speculation that maybe at the end of 2024, the Angels might go in a different direction. That is not the case. Mm-hmm. Perry will helm this team, I believe, through the 2026 season, barring any unforeseen circumstances. But over the winter...
Or some extremely foreseen circumstances, which would be them continuing to be bad. Anyway, over the winter, they made the first big trade of the offseason, acquiring Jorge Soler.
They were cooking early.
They were busy. In November.
The Angels were cooking early November because they were spending all of October buying the ingredients, planning the recipe, and that is probably true.
Yeah. So they trade for Jorge Soler. They sign Yusei Kikuchi to a large contract. They signed Kyle Hendricks to throw some number of innings. They signed Travis d'Arnaud to join Logan Ohapi as the catching tandem. Then they decided to bring in a bunch of formerly super hyped White Sox, which includes Tim Anderson trying to revive his career, which includes Yoan Moncada, who got a guaranteed major league deal. They also bring back another reclamation project, NRI, and J.D. Davis. Kevin Newman gets in the mix there. He will probably be playing shortstop because Zach Neto is recovering from shoulder surgery. The other big bit of news over the winter was that Anthony Rendon is injured once again and will be missing a large portion of this season. Oh, I forgot one more big one, which is Kenley Jansen. Kenley Jansen is the other big move they made a little bit towards the end of the offseason. He will be saving some number of games for them in 2025.
Very quickly on Anthony Rendon, it is funny and it is sad at the same time. I have been on the more critical end of Anthony Rendon just because I find it hard to believe that someone who distastes baseball so completely is doing everything possible to put himself in a position to play that often, to play regularly. Mm-hmm. Some of the injuries are random and unfortunate. Some of them, I believe, could be attributed to a lack of preparation. The way that he has handled those injuries is incredibly, I would just say, is dismissive.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to care about the bigger picture of it all. And to him, I like, sure, man, like you got your big bag of money and you can go sit on your farm in Texas and kick it with your family for the rest of your life. And that's cool.
Yeah.
And I somewhat respect the idea that he legitimately does not care what people think about him, like at all. It's very clear, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, like, just give me like a little bit. Just give me a little bit of.
Yep. Of course, still owed almost $80 million over the next two seasons. He had hip surgery and will likely not be a factor for this team this year.
Who plays more baseball games moving forward? Anthony Rendon or me?
Just any game where you're. I mean, it is an interesting question. People are wondering, is it over? Has he played his last major league game? Have you played your last major league game? Yes. Because it's never coming. But has Anthony Rendon played his last serious game? Especially relevant because he also doesn't seem like someone that would like start playing pickup ball when he's
right. Like he's like, not.
I don't see him, you know, showing up for some games for fun. Okay. Anyway, Anthony Rendon not a factor this year. Who is going to be playing for the Angels in 2025?
Behind the dish is Logan Ohapi, one of the more interesting young catchers in the game. Had a down year in 2024. He's going to be backed up by Travis d'Arnaud, Braves. Longtime backstop who was did not have his option picked up in Atlanta, kind of a surprise. He signed a 2-year deal with the Angels. D'Arnaud is from Orange County. He's very happy to be home. First base is Nolan Chanuel, who is one of the more perplexing players in all of baseball. Maybe we'll talk about him a little bit. At second, Luis Rengifo, who is better than you think. He is better than you think. At third base is not Anthony Rendon. It'll be Yoan Moncada, shortstop. Will be like Kevin Newman, maybe Tim Anderson until Zach Neto is back. It's going to take like 1 or 2 months.
Yeah, I think, I don't even know if 2 months, but he will not. I think April will not include Zach Neto.
And that's important just because Neto was their best player last year. I mean, he was a 5-win shortstop, good defense, a little bit above average with the bat. Like Neto.
30 steals, 20 homers. Like he's a dude. We're big Neto fans. So not having him to start the season is not great.
He's a ball player. In the outfield, it'll be Taylor Ward in left, who's better than you think. This team may be worse than you think, but individual pieces are better. Joe Adell in center field because Mike Trout, Michael Nelson, the GOAT, is moving from center to left. No, he's not moving away from New Jersey. He'll never do that. But he is moving from center field to right field. The designated hitter on this team is Jorge Soler, the rotation. Yusei Kikuchi. Jose Soriano, Tyler Anderson, Kyle Hendricks, Reed Detmers, Caden Dana. Caden Dana, who, by the way, looked terrible in spring training. In the bullpen, Kenley Jansen, who only throws cutters. Ben Joyce, who only throws hard. The one big question, though, about this team is going to make us laugh quite a bit. Is taking the players' phones away the secret to getting back to the playoffs? Now, if you hear that question and you're like, Jake, what are you saying? It came out last week, I believe, courtesy of Jeff Fletcher, that the Angels instituted a new policy via skipper Ron Washington that players are no longer allowed to have their phones out in the locker room. Kids these days, they just underperform their projections. This rule was instituted because the Angels want the boys to be talking more. They want these guys to bond. They want them to be friends. They don't want them scrolling their day away. What do you think about this policy?
So, Red Bollinger, MLB.com, Angels beat writer. He wrote about this, got some insight from Wash and from some of the Angels. I do like that the headline for this story on .com is, quote, "It's just different. Neto Halos responding well to Wash's new rule." Like, so if you hadn't heard the story, what would you expect?
New rule?
It's just, if you didn't know about this before you saw that headline, I don't know what you would
have expected. High socks?
Responding well. Like, okay. And then you open, you're like, huh, no phones. So the interesting background of this is that apparently Ron Washington first instituted this This is from Red Story. Washington said he first instituted the rule when he was managing the Rangers from 2007 to 2014.
Yeah, because everyone had freaking Motorola Razors.
Veterans like Michael Young, Adrian Beltre, and Ian Kinsler enforced the rule for a $500 fine, and he believes it helped them build the chemistry that led to back-to-back World Series appearances in 2010 and 2011.
Oh, I just love the idea that that Nelson Cruz or, you know, C.J. Wilson was in the 2009 Rangers clubhouse playing Tetris on his BlackBerry.
Yeah, Snake on the Nokia. It wasn't that long ago. But watch this. It's not punishment. It's just trying to keep them focused. Also interesting that the fine apparently for this is still $500. So no inflation.
Really?
Which is kind
of a good deal.
Kind of stunning. I think, honestly, there's probably several players in the clubhouse that will happily check social media for $500.
Mike Trout, who the Angels gave $432, I believe, million dollars, $423 million.
He can afford to do some scrolling.
$500 a day?
But either way, $426.5 million. I love this. I don't know how long it will last or if it matters at all. It isn't a very easy thing to be like, yeah, now we're all talking to each other. I will say, like, to just put this very, not to take it too seriously, obviously we don't care about this that much, and Washington,
it will not change the season.
I know. But I mean, like, not that this should be news to people, but we joke, kids these days, like, it is true. You go into a big league clubhouse and everyone's on their phone. Like, that is, we see it all the time. It's not like we're not on our phone too. All the media is on their phone. Like, that's the world we're living in, but it is a thing that you see. And I can imagine if you're in Wash's position, that is a thing that if you feel like you're in charge of the clubhouse, you think you can change and it will make a difference. There's a lot of reasons to not believe the Angels are going to be any better. And I don't think that this is going to make change it meaningfully. But honestly, I do love it. I think the funniest version of this is that the Angels are playing well, and it gets to the point where there's other teams that aren't playing well, and it's like,
Well,
we've tried everything.
No phones.
Is that going to become something?
I hope they win the World Series, and next year, no phones in MLB, banned, no phone at all.
Anyway, so we'll see how that goes.
I will say, something you do see sometimes is the player FaceTiming at their locker.
Oh, yeah.
That should be banned. I mean, FaceTiming in public. This is also how I feel about taking a meeting at a coffee shop. Okay. Step outside.
I had an experience like that recently at a coffee shop where it was a tough situation. Guy was like facing the window and just getting after it.
Look,
just blabbering to a degree that was stunning. I was like, I don't need to hear about
that. That's a pet peeve. I hate when Mike Trout is on a business meeting in the clubhouse about his new golf course.
Trout National.
This rule is great. I am actually pro this.
Okay.
Any team zagging at all is a big thumbs up for me.
Let's talk about the baseball team.
Players on this team.
Yes.
Besides Steve Jobs.
Sure. Yes. Any Android users? Are Android users allowed to use their phones in the clubhouse? Key players.
How much should Android pay the Angels for an Android exemption for players in the clubhouse?
Interesting. What was the jitterbug? What was the
Tamagotchi?
No, the phone that's like you can only call like five people.
Oh, mommy, daddy, police. Yeah.
All right. Key player. I'm going to go with Mike Trout.
Whoa.
So Mike Trout.
Tell me about this guy.
As he moves to right field, he is turning 34 in August. He has played more than 90 games once in the last 5 years.
Gosh.
He actually was healthy in the 2020 season. So let's just talk about the last 4 years. 36 games, 119 in 2022, six-win player, even in 119 games. 82 games in 2023, 29 games a year ago.
29 games.
And last year, at the beginning of last year, Trout, you know, with his new manager, Ron Washington, I saw him play when they came to Cincinnati, and Trout was rejuvenated. He was stealing bases. He was slugging.
Maybe not a good idea.
The batting average was low, but it was like, all right, he looks energized. And then his body betrayed him once again, putting him back on the shelf, and ultimately, it seems, moving him to right field, where he hopefully will be able to spend less time running around and more time hitting baseballs. I think Mike Trout, at this point, it's, you know, the conversation about him has evolved, because for a while it was like, we got to get Trout back to the postseason. And now it's like, we're not even pretending to spend energy about getting the Angels back in the postseason. It's just like, can we just see him play? Can he just stay on the field? Yeah. Can we watch one of the greatest players of all time play baseball? So no matter where the Angels are in the standings, I hope we get that again. Will it change their fortunes? I don't know. Probably not. I guess, yes. Presumably, if Mike Trout played more than 29 games last year, they probably don't lose the most games in franchise history. But I don't think they make the playoffs either. So I don't think a 7-win Trout makes the Angels a postseason team, but it would certainly make me happier as a baseball fan.
Last year was the first time since 2011 that we had an All-Star game without Mike Trout in it.
Yeah.
I really want you to chew on that for a second.
Or at least not invited. I don't know if he's attended every single one. No, he probably has attended every single one because he loves that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not the point.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's that was really how you felt that. You felt that, like, man, like, you know, no matter where the Angels were, at least you could always see Trout hanging out with his fellow All-Stars in July.
And to open up the heart a little bit, it makes me feel mortal watching Mike Trout disintegrate. It makes me feel old. It is the passing of time. For so long, it was just so bankable, dependable.
Yep.
It defined an era of following and talking about the sport in such a significant way. And the idea of him being irrelevant is so sad.
That's the saddest part. But we still love Mike Trout. As for other key players, again, there's a lot of young guys that, like, we are constantly wanting to see more proof from that they are good, right? That was Neto. He did it last year. Awesome. Good player. Love that for him. Now Joe Adele has the spotlight, right? He's the center fielder. Nolan Shanoa, can he find more power? Logan Ohapi, can he stay on the field? Can he be an above average hitter? You know, some of these young pitchers, Jose Soriano has looked awesome at times. Can he stay healthy and actually be a regular starter? They have some other young arms. Can they get Detmers back on track? I mean, what a catastrophe that was last season. They still have him. Maybe he can become something. So there's a lot of guys to pick from there, but obviously we're just focused on Trout.
I'll pick Caden Dana, actually, just because developing homegrown pitching has been very difficult for them. Jose Soriano last year, that was a win. Figuring out that he could start. And getting him in the rotation. Nasty. He's nasty. He's a real legit arm. Let's see if they could do it a little bit different with Caden Dana. It's more of like a mid-rotation solid guy. But that's helpful, and this organization needs that. The over-under for the Angels, owners of the longest playoff drought in MLB right now, 71.5. Taking the under on the Angels is always the smart move.
Yeah.
Are you smart today, Jordan?
I am. I'm going to keep doing this. Again, I think they'll win more than 63, which was last year, but 71.5. I still think this is the last place team. And I think that this is still a team with zero depth whatsoever as it was last year. And that was ultimately what sank them. And I think that will once again hamper them in serious ways. And I think they will be quite bad. So under.
I am going to take the under. I really want to take the over. I would take the over on 69.5.
Okay, so you're going for 71.
I think you're going to be okay.
All right.
I think it'll be a little bit better than we think.
Still pretty bad.
Depressing over under. Mike Trout games. Mike Trout game over under. I want you to think about where you'd set that line. Okay?
All right.
Or just tell me how many games you think he's going to play. We're going to say the number on the count of three.
And then we're going to move on.
At the same time. How many games does Mike Trout play this season? This is trying to predict the impossible.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. 112. Okay.
Right. I hope you're right.
I hope
Let's
you're
move on to the A's. The A's, the A's, the A's. By the way, the Angels are projected to win 76 games by Fangraphs with 4% odds to win the division, 11% playoff odds. The A's are also projected to win 76 games with, I think, identical division and playoff odds, nearly, maybe a smidge more postseason odds for the A's. What happened a year ago? Well, last year, they had the lowest over-under of any team. It was 57.5. In the first half, they were on pace to go under 57. They were horrible. Their May and June, it was like, oh God, this is as bad as we thought. The vibes were bad last year in Oakland. Oh my God, this is terrible. And then in the second half, they were sneaky, one of the better teams in baseball. 500 after the All-Star break got them to 69 wins. We both took the over on 57.5. You said 62 to 63. I said 65 is doable.
It was. It was not as doable. It was done.
They got to 69. And
nice.
That, again, it took a heroic effort because they were so bad in the first half. But by the end of the year, there were some reasons to be excited about the roster. Obviously, the story is still this team leaving Oakland, and that is how we still felt at the end. And that is still one of the biggest stories in the sport. And we should not just gloss over that and move past it as if it wasn't a big deal.
But this is the thing. Like, it was obviously cool for A's fans that the team was interesting at the end. It's better than the alternative, I'm sure they would say, right? If you're gonna get dumped, you might as well have a good time down the stretch. But now it's like, okay, who's this for? Who are the A's for? Yeah. Is kind of what I struggle with. Because if you're the organization, right, you're trying to get Las Vegans. You're trying to get the vegans, Las Vegans, interested in the club. But it's like, okay, well, they're not going to be there for 3 years. Like, it's just a very odd dynamic. I am fascinated by them. They went out this winter and spent some money because they kind of had to. Otherwise, they were going to risk a grievance from the union for being too frugal. They went and signed Luis Severino to a 3-year, $67 million deal to be their ace. Traded for Jeffrey Springs from the Tampa Rays. Maybe someone you folks don't know a whole lot about because he was an oft-injured starting pitcher on the Rays. He's pretty good, and more importantly, he's being paid $10 million, so he was not exactly cheap. Signed Gio Urshela, and then they extended Brent Rooker, and they extended Lawrence Butler. Those are the two big ones that got a lot of press. And I go back, before we say who's on this team, just one last thing about A's-dom, okay? One A's-dom thing. What do we want this organization to be now? Because they have wronged a community. We all agree on that, right? And it sucks and it's unfortunate. Do we want them to crash and burn and continue to make bad on-field decisions?
Or do we want them to crash and burn in a way that makes the ownership look bad, right?
Yeah.
Do we want the ownership to feel embarrassed, to feel shame?
Do we want them to be good in Vegas? Because I think that there are baseball fans in Las Vegas who are going to love having a team, and that's real, and it doesn't take away the pain from Oakland, but that does matter, and I guess we'll talk about Sacramento in a second. It's like, what do we want here? What I want is a year delay in the stadium building process. Mm-hmm. That I want egg on the face of the ownership group. Mm-hmm. I want promises broken.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to look silly and stupid. I don't want the players to have to bear the brunt of that because, remember, it's not their fault. Lawrence Butler didn't get to choose who drafted him. You know, it's none of that is on his shoulders, and I think people from Oakland understand that. So I think that's what I want. I want this team to be fine on the field. I don't want them to make any money. I want the ownership group to be embarrassed and shamed into selling the team. That's a dream.
Yeah. But that's why it's so hard, because you can want those things, but it would make it worse for the players. You know, it would.
Yeah.
It would. OK, they have to spend next year in Sacramento. That sucks. You know, that's not. I know they did the renovations and they made it better, but like that's not what these are players who played their way to the big leagues and they want to be prove themselves as good major leaguers and they want to win. And so I'm with you that, like, I want that ownership to still feel the scorn and wrath that, you know, Oakland delivered to them. But it's just hard. That is what has presented, not to mention for the people of Sacramento, who I'm sure there are people in Sacramento. I'm sure there are A's fans in Sacramento that are feeling weird. I'm sure there are people that are at least no A's fans in Sacramento that are like, I'm excited that I have a major league team down the street that I can go sit really close to. In this smaller ballpark, but also, like, I know how this happened and it's not good.
Yep.
And also know that they are supposed to leave. So why am I going to get super invested in this team for even a couple years? So I don't know. It creates a lot of very strange feelings. And that's for us who are about as distant and separated from as possible. So I can't even imagine for the people, you know, in Northern California.
Before Chance the Rapper went big mid, he did a song with Action Bronson way back when called Baby Blue. And there's I'm just going to read some of the lines from this. I think this is kind of how I feel about John Fisher, the owner. Okay. I'm going to edit this a little bit. Don't worry. Okay.
No, okay. I'm just, all right. I wasn't expecting this. This isn't on our document for those wondering.
I hope every soda you drink already shaken up. I hope your dreams dry like raisins in the baking sun. I hope there's snow in your driveway. I hope you never get off Fridays and you work at a Fridays that's always busy on Fridays. I hope you win the lottery and lose your ticket. I hope the zipper on your jacket gets stuck and your headphones short and your charger don't work and you spill stuff on your shirt. I hope your tears don't hurt and I can smile in your face. I hope you're happy. I hope you're happy. I hope you ruined this S for a reason. I hope you're happy.
Who plays for this baseball team? Behind the dish, Shea Langeliers. First base, Tyler Soderstrom. He's going to have to figure it out this year or Nick Kurtz is about to take his job. Second base, Zach Geloff. Very disappointing sophomore season for him in 2024. Third base, Gio Urshela. Shortstop, Jacob Wilson. Very exciting rookie. Outfield, left field platoon, Seth Brown and Miguel Andujar.
Andujar!
J.J. Bleday in center. He had a nice season last year. Lawrence Butler, ascending superstar. In right, D.H. Brent Rooker. He absolutely mashes. He will be the D.H. Rotation, Luis Severino, Jeffrey Springs, the new ads. J.P. Sears has been there for a while. Mitch Spence, a Rule 5 pick who threw a ton of innings last year. And Osvaldo Beto. Some Beto buzz in this camp. So we'll see how he does in the rotation. And then Mason Miller throwing 1 billion miles per hour in the bullpen. They also signed Jose Leclerc. Comes over from Texas. Michelle Otañez is another anonymous reliever who I quite like. He throws very hard. And TJ McFarland is still throwing baseballs. The one big question for this team, besides all the existential ones, focusing on the field. From a competitive standpoint, will they be kind of cute? Kind of frisky like they were a year ago, or could they actually be good? Our colleague Russ Dorsey is going all in. He's like, A's going to make the playoffs. We're like, all righty then. That's probably saying more about the other teams in the division than it is the A's, but
that's probably saying more about Russ Dorsey than it is about the A's. No. We were on a call, work call with Russ, and we were like, hey, Russ, you sure? He's like, yeah, vibes. And we were like,
interesting.
That's a much better answer than saying, I believe in the starting pitching.
True.
Which I don't. And I think that's the crux of my doubt regarding the A's is there just aren't enough good players. Like they had an exciting offseason, but remember, a lot of the money they committed was to two players who were already on this team. Sure. And so if you look at the team year over year, you're like, okay, why are they better? How is this team actually good and not just interesting? It's because of Severino and Springs showing up. That's important.
That's the answer. Those are the guys that have to be, they are the one and two starters. Right.
That's why Springs is my key player.
Sure.
Severino, I believe in at this point.
I'm high on Severino. I think a lot of people thought that contract was way too big, but like to me, Severino versus Minaya, I understand most people took Minaya, and I know he was better in the second half. I'm in on Severino. I like this fit.
Jeffrey Springs has been a starter since 2022. He was good in a pretty big bulk in 2022. 16 innings in 23, 24 innings last year. Excuse me, 33 innings last year.
He did come back from TJ.
It's like he needs to pitch and he needs to perform for them to be good. Yep. And I'm a little skeptical that that's going to be the case.
Yep.
Who on this team is your key player?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jacob Wilson. Again, a lot of young hitters to choose from here. I think Soderstrom's most important in terms of just like, again, like I said, their first round pick last year, Nick Kurtz from Wake Forest, like he's coming. But I think Jacob Wilson's fascinating. He is a very unique player. He is in the Luis Arraez mold of swing at everything, make contact with everything. But Jacob Wilson can play shortstop. Jacob Wilson also might actually have some more power coming at some point as a 23-year-old that could still maybe pack on a few pounds. I think he's a very interesting Rookie of the Year candidate this year as someone who could hit 300. I mean, he was a 400 hitter in the minor leagues and not a tiny sample. And I just think he's going to be a very divisive player because his exit velos are not going to be pretty. But he puts the bat in the ball as good as almost anyone on the planet. And I think that's going to drive him to a pretty long career.
Three quick Jacob Wilson things. One, this is the son of Jack Wilson, former big league shortstop, Pirates shortstop. take a pause from this podcast. Go watch some Jack Wilson defense highlights. Some of the most slick, swift, cool ground ball ever. It's amazing. Two, Jacob Wilson, not an impact base runner. I think that is important
here. That's true.
To understand about him, 6 steals in the minors in 79 games. In college, he only stole 9 bases across 3 seasons. And when Jordan says he hit 400 in the major leagues, like...
The minors.
In the minor leagues. Yeah. Thank you. That's not like, man, he was so... He... career 401 hitter.
How many play appearances? Like 300, 400?
330. Yeah. Still. Yeah. It's a lot. He's an interesting guy. Over under. 71.5.
Same as the Angels. And they are, again, same over under, same projected record, 76 wins. 76 feels optimistic. I will go over 71.5. I think they will take some steps forward. Again, I'm worried about the depth, particularly on the mound. Probably could have talked about Mason Miller for longer. His story is amazing, but this bullpen is still not the best, most inspiring unit. So I will go over 71.5 slightly.
I will go under. Mark Kotze is an awesome manager. I believe that he is very good at this job. I think that this team is not significantly better than it was a year ago. And that is the math to me, plain and simple. One last thing about this team. They have requested that they be called simply the Athletics. No first name. When you go to the MLB standings and you see Texas Rangers, Detroit Tigers, Athletics. No. This pisses me off so much. In America, we have first name, last name, place name, team name. There's no Arsenal. There's no Juventus here, okay? You got to give me a second thing. And so how we choose to describe them this year, I want to set that now.
Okay.
Because I will say Oakland A's at some point in the podcast by accident. We're not calling the Las Vegas A's yet.
No.
Sacramento A's, more interested in. However, they're not in Sacramento, we found out. No. They're in West Sacramento. And so my proposal is this. We refer to them as the YOLO County A's because West Sacramento, where Sutter Health Park is located, that is YOLO County, YOLO. And I think calling them the YOLO A's, I mean, that hits.
It does. You can see. Now, hold on. The YOLO A's or the YOLO County A's?
YOLO. The YOLO County A's is very funny.
Can't decide which feels
Email
better.
Email us. What should we...
That's true. At least call on this podcast, because that's all we can control.
Because we're not...
Control what you can control, folks. I can't, that's what baseball players tell us to do.
I can't get MLB.com to put YOLO A's up there.
No.
But on this pod, you let us know. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. What is the first name of the Athletics this year?
We're going to take a break.
Yep.
When we return, we can talk about the Texas Rangers and Seattle Mariners. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Let's talk about the Texas Rangers. What did they do last year? They were projected for 89.5 wins as the defending...
That was the over-under. I don't know what they were projected for, but coming off a World Series, the over-under was 89.5.
I was going to say, as the defending national champs, there was a lot of hype around the Texas Rangers in 2024.
I actually do have it. This is interesting. So Fangraphs had them last year at the start of the season at 82. Okay, but when you win the World Series and you do have a talented roster, people are going to think, hey, you can't put 82. Everyone's going over on that. And guess what? They would have been wrong.
Because they were under. 78 wins. Under.
Yes, and we both smashed the under last year.
I was adamant. I literally said smash the under.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
I said, no way Scherzer and DeGrom are going to make a lot of starts. Now, obviously, DeGrom was still coming back from Tommy John. But at the time, it was at the beginning of the season, it was like, ooh, maybe they can get DeGrom for the second half. And I was like, I don't think we're going to see him before September. And then they had Scherzer. It was like, Scherzer, I don't think we're going to see a lot of Max Scherzer. That obviously turned out to be true as they only won 78 games.
Okay, so like what went wrong year over year, because I think for a lot of people, they saw this team in 2023 win the World Series, and then they were just a total non-factor, all-time saggy title defense, like not interesting at all. So you have Adolis Garcia, who was a key member of the 23 team, was just bad. Like he was just like an average hitter.
He had like one awesome month and everything else was bad.
You have injuries to Evan Carter. You have injuries to Josh Young. Both those guys only play 45, 46 games. They're non-factors when they do play. Big step back from catcher Jonah Heim.
Huge. He was an all-star. And he had a 602 OPS last year. So that went in the wrong direction. And then Semien was a pretty big step back. Although he did play basically every game. Offensively, it was an average offensive season.
And on the pitching side, those injuries that you mentioned, when you are paying Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer, and they don't play, you're going to be worse than you think. And so there was a whole lot of average Andrew Heaney, a whole lot of decent John Gray, a whole lot of competent Michael Lorenzen, and Nathan Eovaldi did his thing, but there just wasn't enough impact innings here, even though stuff went right. So like Kirby Yates was better than everyone thought as the closer. Awesome year for him. 1.17 ERA in 61 innings.
Robertson was awesome too, and they still had one of the worst bullpens in baseball because basically everybody else was awful.
The number three person in innings for the Texas Rangers behind Eovaldi and Andrew Heaney was Jose Urania. I bet that is something you did not know. And so over this offseason, the Texas Rangers went shopping. They added more players in free agency than any other American League team. That was a re-signing of Nathan Eovaldi to be in the rotation. That was adding Kyle Higashioka on a two-year deal to be the backup catcher. Jock Peterson, new designated hitter. And then they were like, I would like one bullpen, please. Chris Martin, he will try to fix you. Hobie Milner, Luke Jackson, Sean Armstrong, Jacob Webb. And this week, Patrick M. Effing Corbin, the worst pitcher in baseball in the last half decade, who pitched more than anybody else over the last half decade. He is going to be in the rotation because they're dealing with some injuries, it seems. They also traded for Jake Berger. That's significant. And they traded for Robert Garcia from the Nats, trading away Nathaniel Lowe. So who is on this team? Who is the starting lineup? Behind the dish, it is Heim. Not Haim. Heim. Haim better.
Certainly last year.
Certainly last year. Kyle Higashioka is going to be behind the dish as well.
Great season for Kyle. I mean, he was fantastic last year. So if he can replicate that, they're going to be in good shape.
Jake Berger at first. Just a delightful baseball man.
He's awesome.
Kind fellow, too. Second base, Marcus Semien. Third base, Josh Young. Shortstop, Corey Seager. Don't get too excited, Corey, because he can't. Left field, Wyatt Langford. Center field, Evan Carter and Leody Taveras. Right field, Adolis Garcia. DH, Jock Peterson, Jock forever. The rotation. Eovaldi's going on opening day, which I think is interesting. Jacob deGrom is going to be in this rotation on opening day. John Gray, Tyler Molly, Patrick Corbin, with Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker bringing up the rear. They're important. We'll talk about them. Bullpen, Chris Martin. He'll try to fix you. I already said that. Robert Garcia, Jacob Webb, and Hobie Milner. One big question. Will this entirely new pitching staff around Eovaldi be good enough to support this lineup?
Yeah, I mean, you could go in both directions. This is a team that is bringing back, I think, the third fewest innings from last year in their organization. And maybe that's a good thing because of how bad a lot of those innings were, right? No more Heaney, no more Urania. The whole bullpen is new. But the other way to look at it is the lineup was supposed to be so good. It was kind of similar to the conversation we had about Atlanta. Those two offenses were the best in baseball in 2023. Atlanta was like historically good, and Texas was pretty clearly the second best offense. And last year it was like, oh my God, now you add Langford. Now you get a full year from Evan Carter coming off this postseason. They're going to be one of the best again. And while Atlanta was disappointing, it was still an above average offense. The Rangers were bad. It was a bad lineup. I don't think that's possible to happen again, even if some of these players, even if Adolis Garcia's best years are behind him, I don't think he can be that bad again. Maybe he can. But you bring in Jock, you bring in Jake Berger, you bring in new faces. You have a full season of Langford after what he really did down the stretch as one of the best rookies in baseball. If you can get in, now there's less pressure on Carter to really be much of anything, although he's a really interesting player and character, considering how his last year and a half has kind of gone. But it's just so much, still so many question marks on the mound. That's really where they are going to either thrive or just totally collapse, because it's just way too many players from both an actual performance standpoint, when you're talking about the younger guys like Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker, and then from a durability standpoint with guys like DeGrom, with guys like Malley, who's had some moments of concern during the spring, and then Cody Bradford, who's already injured. So I don't know, man. I mean, this team is one of the most difficult ones to project this season. Fangraphs has them at 84 wins, has them at 50% chance to make the playoffs, 27% chance to win the division. Who's a key player for you?
It's Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah.
It's Jacob DeGrom, and it's not close. When Jacob DeGrom pitches, he is the best at it. He's the best at it. Yep. He doesn't do it a lot. He's kind of like a musician who releases an album like every 10 years. You know, like I'm a huge Bon Iver guy. You know that about me?
Yeah, it's true.
That's like my guy. New album coming out next month. Very excited. He does like an album every 5 years.
Okay.
You know? And so he, to me, it's like, he's my Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah.
You know?
That's how it has been for the last 5 years for Jacob DeGrom. That's true. 4 years, really. He made 12 starts in 2020, which is the most you can make in 2020. He has made 35 starts over the last four seasons.
Total.
The hope now is that he will make close to 30 starts. Like, he came back at the end of last year. We saw him pitch in September.
I don't even need 30, dude. I don't even need 30. I need 20.
You need 20, and I need you
in late September.
Yep.
Because here's the thing about Jacob DeGrom, and this sounds so simple. When he pitches and he's Jacob DeGrom, you will probably win that game.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been bad. Like, we haven't. I mean, even before he blew out in 2023, I think they won. He made his six starts, and I think they won five of them. Like,
yeah, like, he's dynamite. And so if we get anything close to legit Jacob DeGrom, the Rangers are going to be a very, very good team, in my opinion. Who's your key player?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of intrigued by Robert Garcia. He is very anonymous, all things considered. And again, there's so many hitters to choose from here. But Robert Garcia is the one. Again, you swap Nathaniel Lowe for him. I know you replace him with Jake Berger. But of all these relievers, Garcia is the one that I can imagine. He was quietly very good for the Nationals. He seems to be the one that they're like, he's our guy. Because all these other relievers, I don't know how I'm getting excited about 38-year-old Chris Martin throwing a bunch of strikes. Luke Jackson, Jacob Webb, Hobie Milt, Sean Armstrong. Like, I'm not seeing impact there at all, even if they're like, okay, Mark Church, a rookie, he throws hard, but like, why am I counting on him? Garcia seems to be the big bet, because it was a one-for-one deal. That was like, Nathaniel Lowe had trade value, right? And that is how they chose to spend it. And so Garcia seems to be the one that really needs to deliver in whatever role that ends up being, because the bullpen was awful. And the pitching, if the starting pitching is enough of a question, it might not even matter how good or bad the bullpen is. But Garcia is interesting to me because of that trade in particular.
Over under is 85.5.
So if you listen to the AL Central pod, I talked about I was struggling with picking the Tigers or the Rangers for that last postseason spot in the American League. I believe when I submitted my official predictions, I ended up going with Detroit. I'm going to go over on 85.5. I guess I'm still picking them to miss slightly. I think that they have just enough talent. This could go very wrong again. They could absolutely end up with a weirdly similar season to last year, if even more disappointing because of the talent that they've brought in. But I think they have enough talent to where I think it is going to go just right, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do end up back in the postseason. Over slightly.
I am irrationally positive about this team. I think they will be over. I think they will win the division. And I have them as my American League World Series representative. Now, this could go wrong, as I'm sure everyone remembers. Last year, I picked the Braves to beat the Twins in the World Series. Are these my Twins? Are the Rangers my Twins? Who can say? Here's why. This lineup could be so good.
Yeah.
It's so many of the same dudes who were amazing 2 years ago, Corey Seager is still the guy. He's still that dude. Jake Berger is a very good hitter. Wyatt Langford could be a six-win player. He could be an all-star. He could get...
Six wins is going to be hard as a left fielder. That's true. But he could be an all-star for sure.
Like, he bangs. Like, he was amazing down the stretch.
He's already who I want to see in the home run derby, I think, more than most.
And so, to me, it's like you take the 2023 lineup. You add Jock. You add Berger in for Low.
You hopefully get Josh Young for more than 50.
You hopefully get Josh Young and Evan Carter. And you have Wyatt Langford. And you have a healthy enough DeGrom. Like, I think this team, I believe in the infrastructure of the Texas Rangers. I think the coaching staff is good. I think the front office knows what it's doing.
Bruce Bochy, should probably say his name.
Bruce Bochy is the manager. He's a Hall of Famer.
His name yet.
I think the Rangers do a great job of combining the progressive and the old school.
They got Skip now.
They got my man Skip Schumacher in the front office. That's my guy.
Skip and Chris Young is a pretty hilarious duo.
The tallest and the shortest boys. Yeah, I think this team's going to be great. I'm in
on
the Rangers.
Going over. We're both going over.
I don't want to go to Arlington ever again in my life.
Sounds like you do.
I don't. Well, but that's why I want to have, that's what I'm saying. Like, it is in my best interest to be low on this team.
Well, no, but I think you're playing it right because either worst case scenario, if you have to go back there, you're correct.
Respectfully to the people of Dallas, I've heard Dallas is a great place.
It's not
Arlington. All right, our next team is the Seattle freaking Mariners, a team that means a lot to my good pal Jordan Schusterman right here. Jordan, you could do 3 hours on this team, so I'm actually going to run point here and just kick you the rock when I decide to do that. Their projected record is 84-78. They have 33% division odds and 58% playoff odds. That number, in my opinion, should be 54. How did they do last year? The over-under was 86.5. We both took the over on 86.5. And they won 85 games. Not good enough. They fired skipper Scott Servais in the middle of the season, bringing in Dan Wilson, former catcher, as not even an interim manager. Very rare, just hiring the new guy in the middle of the season. And they were better in September under Dan Wilson. The lineup turned around, but in the words of Freddie Adu's ex-girlfriend, just too little too late. Mm. What'd they do this winter?
Not much. Not much. This was the first offseason with Jerry DePoto that did not feature a trade where everyone was like, what did Jerry DePoto just do? They really were inactive on the trade market. Made a couple waiver claims, some reliever acquisitions, but for the most part, it was pretty sleepy. For Seattle, they tried to sign Carlos Santana and failed. They tried to sign Justin Turner and failed. They decided to bring back Jorge Polanco, who had zero market, apparently, coming off his terrible first year in Seattle. After declining his option, they had an option for him. They declined that and it was like, all right, well, that was a disappointing tenure. And instead, they bring him back on a lesser contract to play third base. They bring in Donovan Solano. That was the one really new hitter that they brought in, and Rowdy Tellez, who is, I guess, still competing to make this roster for some reason. And they got a new jersey patch. Nintendo will be on their jersey, which, as far as jersey patches go, is at least something that people have heard of.
Defeats the purpose, if you ask me.
Interesting
point. Oh, watching a Mariners game. Oh, yeah, Nintendo.
Again.
That's
fine. I'll take it over the weird insurance companies. And they hired Kevin Seitzer. That's actually, I think, an interesting hire.
To be there.
Hitting coach.
Thank you.
Edgar Martinez had taken over as the hitting coach in September. He is still in the organization as like the director of hitting, but because where Edgar is at in his life and because he's Edgar and he can do whatever he wants, he is not going to be like traveling, doing 162 games. He's still around. He's still a big part of this operation. But Kevin Seitzer, who has been the Braves hitting coach for a very long time, he comes over and is now their new hitting coach.
Who's on this team? Behind the dish, it'll be Cal Raleigh. One of the best catchers in baseball. First base is going to be Luke Raley and Donovan Solano, maybe Rowdy Tellez. If that doesn't jazz you up, then I don't know what does. Second base, Dylan.
That's not where you should be hating. Save your hate for some of these other spots, okay? Luke Raley and his 129 OPS plus deserves more respect. Go ahead.
I guess it does. Second base, Dylan Moore. Can I hit on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Dylan Moore, though. Here's the problem with Dylan Moore, dude.
Hell of a defender.
If Dylan Moore was just the bench guy.
Exactly.
For the Mariners.
Yeah, it's that simple.
He's beloved. He's lovable. He's perfect.
Right.
One of my favorite Dylan Moore things quickly. So you can correct me if I'm wrong. His wife is Puerto Rican. Yes. And so a couple years ago, he went to the Bad Bunny concert in Seattle with all the Latin dudes on the Mariners. And
Dylan Moore's a great character. I still like him, but again, he shouldn't be an everyday player.
But there's this picture of Dylan Moore, his wife, and every Latin Mariner at the Bad Bunny concert. It's outstanding. Third base, Jorge Polanco. Shortstop, J.P. Crawford. The outfield of Randy Arozarena, Julio Rodriguez, and Victor Robles, which is a fascinating trio. Randy, they acquired him at the deadline. One of the all-time coolest moments was Randy getting traded before the game in Tampa and then sitting in the outfield before leaving to join the Mariners at the Trop. The last great Trop moment, perhaps. Julio Rodriguez, you know the deal. He's been a little bit underwhelming offensively the last two seasons. I think we had him grouped with Bobby Witt.
Yeah.
And he has not been
disappointing and is still probably the best center fielder in baseball.
So, kind of sick.
Yeah. Good place to be.
I wish I could disappoint my way to that level of success. And then Victor Robles, who spent a half decade underwhelming and underperforming with the Washington Nationals. Remember, when Victor Robles was coming up with Juan Soto, it was Robles and Soto, not Soto and Robles. So how about that? Then Robles latches on with the Mariners and is like freaking awesome, and they give him a two-year deal, and here we are. DH spot, Mitch Garver, Mitch Haniger, Mitch, any other Mitch?
Mitch Raley, Mitch Tellez.
Who's the most famous Mitch? My father-in-law's name, Mitch.
Yeah, I was going to say, your father-in-law's probably my answer.
You know who the most famous Mitch is?
Yeah, I think I do know.
McConnell.
Yeah.
Can't hit a lick.
Thanks for bringing that up. Rotation, Logan Gilbert on opening day. Instead of Luis Castillo, who will be the two? Bryce Miller and Brian Wu, those guys were awesome last year. And Emerson Hancock will be in the rotation because George Kirby has got a bit of a shoulder issue. Very ominous.
Got boo-boo.
They're saying it's not that big of a deal. They still expect to have him back by the end of April, but scary. The bullpen, which was kind of a sneaky big part of the problem last year. Andres Munoz, he's still awesome. Gregory Santos, who they acquired from the White Sox and was super disappointing because he barely pitched. And then Colin Snyder, who was one of their random relievers who was awesome last year. Matt Brash, one of the best relievers in baseball in 2023. He is coming back from Tommy John. He will be back at some point in the first half. The one big question about Seattle. Was September under Dan Wilson with an improved offense, Edgar Martinez telling them to just simplify things, just hit the ball at the middle. They're just going old school. They're just saying, and then all the Mariners fans are like, this is so much better. Oh, whoa, why didn't you just tell me? Why didn't Edgar Martinez just tell me to just do this, this, this? And now they had a great offense. Was that a sign of things to come?
No.
Or was it merely a mirage?
Yes.
There is Jake's answer. I guess we're done talking about the Mariners. Do we have anything else to say? Key player. It is involved. I mean, it has to do with the offense, right? I mean, the pitching, the very basic question about the pitching is, I mean, if they're on the mound, I think they will basically be that good again. It's one of the best rotations in baseball. I think without Kirby, I think now it's probably more in the top five than the top two or three. But it's even those four, 25 teams would love to have. So they're in great shape there. I think the bullpen should be better, especially as Brash comes back and Santos is actually pitching. But it's about the lineup. It's about the offense. I'm going to go with J.P. Crawford. I think he was one of the best shortstops in baseball in 2023. And I know it was mostly injury related, but he was bad. He was still playing a decent shortstop, well below average hitter. And what he was as an on-base machine at the top of the lineup in 2023 was such a big part of why that offense was just more competent, more consistent. And if he can become that again, whether that's at the top of the lineup or it's more the bottom, he looked like he was becoming a kind of a top-end shortstop with that 2023 season. I'm not expecting him to return to 2023, but he has to be at least average, if not a little bit more. I think that's just so important. And then Robles is just an amazing thing. I mean, for those of you who don't know, what he hit .328 last year with the Mariners in over 200 at-bats, nearly a .400 on base, stole 30 bases in 77 games. It is one of the more ridiculous breakouts after being cut midseason that we've seen. And if he can be even average, that would also help this offense in a big way.
For me, it's Randy Arozarena, who they spent some real prospect capital to acquire at the deadline last year. GM Jerry, Pobo, Jerry DePoBo was basically saying, hey, Randy Rosarena was our big offseason back. We just traded for him at the deadline last year.
Yep.
Randy was worse in 2024 than he'd been in the years prior. His defense took a huge step back. I know that's not the biggest deal in the world when you're playing an outfield corner, but he is not a good defender, or at least was not last year. He still walked a ton. But the overall batted ball quality took a bit of a step back. He wasn't hitting balls at optimal launch angles last year. He is 30. You look at Randy and you look at the Rays' willingness to move on from Randy. And when the Rays do something, you tend to think,
uh-oh,
what do they know?
Yep.
What do the Rays know? I am wary of Randy this year. I'm a little skeptical. When he's cooking, he's cooking.
I mean, he might be the most famous Mariner. I mean, like, he's one of the
Julio,
most...
Julio.
You don't got to tell
Email
me.
Us.
I love Julio. I think Randy's one of the most famous players in baseball. And that does not automatically translate to awesome offensive production, but it would be awesome if he was. If
Randy
he was.
Is not a top 20 famous player.
Dude. Randy is... He had an entire month to himself in October of 2020, and he also did it in the World Baseball Classic. I think
he was on the Rays.
I don't care. He had one of the greatest postseasons of all time,
which is
when people are watching, when people didn't have anything else to do.
You think Randy Rosarena is a top 20 most famous baseball player right now?
I think he might be. Yeah, I think he might be.
We're not going to do this right now. I'm going to compile a list and prove to Jordan that he's.
I think
wrong.
He might be. I don't want to go into the whole Instagram follower thing. I think he's way up there. I think his...
Okay, can I just set a zone here? Freddie Freeman? Who's more famous?
Freddie Freeman.
Okay, great. That's helpful for me. I'll build the list. Over-under for this team is 85.5.
Ugh. So last year, they barely under. 86.5 was last year. They go 85. I'm gonna say it's same thing. Slight under. If they make the playoffs, win the division, I won't be shocked. But now, after these last 2 years, I am going to assume that things will go slightly wrong instead of slightly right. So, kind of bums me out. But they could be good. I'll go slight under. 85.
How do you feel about your favorite team? They could be good. I will also take the under. Jordan tends to be an optimistic follower of his team.
Yeah,
I'm trying
a different strategy this year.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll talk about the team that wins the division usually.
Yes.
Houston Astros. Welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbercast. All good things must come to an end at some point.
Oh, you had anything else to say about that?
No, I just thought.
Oh, that's not related to the last team we're going to talk about?
The Houston Astros last year won 88 games. Their over-under was 92.5. We both took the over. We were wrong about that as they did finish with 88. They started the year, though, 7-19. People were burying them. They went to Mexico. They pooped their brains out.
That's where the season turned around for the better. You made it sound like it got worse there.
No, like they pooped. Then they pooped their brains out.
I don't know what that means. But they beat the Rockies at the end of April in Mexico, and their season turned around from there. As they storm back to the top of the AL West standings, winning their fourth straight division title.
They have won every AL West title since 2017, except for 2020, which was the A's. And I firmly believe, I think this is totally fair, if 2020 had been a full season, they would have won that one too.
Yeah, probably. That was a weird team, but it's true. Their ALCS streak ended, though, as they fell on their face against the Tigers.
Why'd the ALCS streak end, Jordan? Because the...
Tigers won again. But yes, this season in 2024 was essentially bookended by feelings of it's over.
It's Jover.
It's Jover. 7-19 start. It's like, wow. All right. I guess the Astros just stink now. And then they were basically the best team in baseball for the rest of the season, or one of two or three. And then they just kind of got embarrassed on their home field against AJ Hinch, hilariously enough. And then because of their offseason activity, one of the most relevant teams of the offseason, for better or for worse, in which Alex Bregman leaves,
I think the timeline
almost comes back. I mean, I don't even remember how many different directions this went with Bregman. It was kind of ridiculous.
But here's kind of the order of operations, right? I think the first thing is they do a trade for Nolan Arenado, who then says, I'm good. Nolan Arenado declines a trade to Houston. They pivot in the immediate aftermath of that, signing Christian Walker. And when they sign Christian Walker to play first base, right, and they trade for Isak Paredes from the Cubs, sending away Kyle Tucker, that solidifies their two-corner infield spots, implying that Alex Bregman is all but gone. But then Bregman lingers on the market. He stays out there. Every day that passes, a reunion feels somewhat more likely. Womp, frickin' womp. Bregman signs with the Red Sox. He is gone. Their only free agent addition was Christian Walker. The one other notable thing, though, in the Kyle Tucker deal, sending him to Chicago, they get back Cam Smith. The time, it's like Cam Smith, top prospect, first round pick last year.
He'll be a big part of their team in 2027.
Big, big dude, very physical, bad infield defender, maybe a bad outfield defender. Rakes. He shows up to camp and it's like, oh, he could be ready like today, like next week.
And part of that is because their outfield situation is questionable at best. And let's get into that as we tell you who is on this baseball team.
Behind the dish is Yiner Diaz, a man who swings at everything and
usually hits it. Can he continue to do that?
And can he get better as a defensive catcher? First base, Christian Walker, after a half decade of consistency in the desert. Mauricio Dubon will be playing second base because it's Hoover. Like Jose Jover?
Oh, okay. That's true. Good edit. I like that. Yeah. Where's Altuve?
Altuve's in left field. Isak Paredes in third. Jeremy Peña at short. Jake Myers in center field. Right field will be Chaz McCormick. Ben Gamble, who looks like Steve the Pirate from Dodgeball. Cam Smith. Yordan Alvarez DHing. An underrated pitching staff at this point, helmed by Framber Valdez, who's hitting free agency after the season. Hunter Brown. Ronel Blanco. Spencer Arrighetti, a personal favorite of mine, Hayden Wesneski, and then like allegedly Lance McCullers is going to be back at some point. He hasn't been a meaningful contributor in 2.5 seasons.
Meaningful? He hasn't pitched. He hasn't pitched since the 2022 World Series. I believe he did make his first
spring training
appearance, yeah. So that's something.
The big question for them is how much do they miss Tucker and Bregman? Is this, in other words, the end of an era?
I mean, it basically is. It is, because this team just looks so different now. But is their reign atop this division over? We are doing them last. I am going to pick them to win the division, and I'll go even farther than that. But it has slowly over the years become a very different looking roster around Jose Altuve, and now Jose Altuve is playing left field for interesting reasons. With Framber in particular, also about to hit free agency, having seen his entire rise happen within the context of this era, is also compelling. But back to the big question, Bregman Tucker, this is a big decision by the front office to purposefully trade Kyle Tucker away. And the Bregman one, did they personally leave him? I mean, yes, they made the decision to move on from both of those players at the same time. We've seen them move on from Springer. We've seen them move on from Correa, right? Like, they've done these one at a time. To do both in one offseason and to bring in players like Paredes, players like Christian Walker to replace them, that is a big choice. Big choice.
And you can say, oh, Christian Walker could be a better offensive player this year than Kyle Tucker. Isak Paredes could be a more productive player than Alex Bregman. Mm-hmm. I'd put both of those at what, 25%? 30%?
Yeah.
Could doesn't win championships, baby. Simple as that for me. I think it's worth just quickly explaining why Jose Altuve is playing left field for people who are maybe confused about that. The organization had been thinking about this for some time. They went to Altuve with the idea at the end of last season. And with Bregman being on the market, it became relevant in the wake of that because they add Paredes in to play third base. Bregman, then it's like, okay, what are we going to do? Bregman would play second. He would play third. That would then move Altuve to the outfield. The thinking there is that his defense at second was so bad. It was really bad the last few years. He's athletic enough, theoretically, to go move to left field. The top two pitchers on this team, Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez, are both sinker-heavy guys with top 15 ground ball rates in baseball. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have a bad defender somewhere, you'd rather have that bad defender in the smallest outfield corner in the league with the Crawford boxes at Daikin Park.
That's right.
Not Minute Maid anymore.
Nope.
You'd rather have that guy there than at second base. And so that's why Altuve is moving. And that is why Jose Altuve is my key player. Not just for the defensive switch, but because he is this, now that Bregman's gone, this is the Jose Altuve era, right? It is also the George Springer, Correa, Bregman era, sure. But when we look back on this, it is Altuve.
He was there before everybody else, and he's probably going to be there after everybody else. So
and
it's him.
There were some red ish, yellow, orangish flags in his profile last year, which is understandable because he is 35 now, and players get worse at 35. Yeah. And so what is Jose Altuve?
Yeah.
Is he a good hitter? Is he a great hitter? He has always kind of bucked the trend a little bit of, like, you look at some of his batted balls, you're like, this guy doesn't hit the ball really that hard.
Yeah.
But guess what? He's yanking it into the Crawford
when you
boxes.
Do it for that long, too, it's hard to bet against it. I will say, though, the focus right now, because he's trying to learn this new position and is occasionally looking quite foolish, is, oh, my God, what a disaster. What a joke. There's Jose Altuve running around out there and left. I get that. And, yes, we might get some embarrassing moments for him out there. I think it'll be whatever. The most important thing is that he's still hitting. Because that is what, when you are getting rid of Bregman and Tucker, has to continue. And there's a lot of pressure on him to do that. Because, as you said, there are some reasons to believe it might be trending in the wrong direction.
His walk rate dropped 4 percentage points last year. That's concerning to me.
Yeah.
They need Altuve to be Altuve
if
they're going to win the division. Who's important for you?
Let's talk about Camp Smith. Let's just wrap on that.
Dude.
I don't know if he's going to make the team. It seems he's still in camp as we record this on Friday morning with opening day less than a week away. It's pretty astonishing. I think whether he makes the team out of camp or not, the fact that they have already started to play him in the outfield because there's certainly no room for him in the infield and he might not be good enough to play the infield anyway, that tells me they are fast-tracking him. And whether he's on the opening day roster or not, because there's just not a lot blocking him ahead of him right now, unless Chaz McCormick has this epic bounce back, this is a player I expect to get, you know, 300, 400 plate appearances in the big leagues this year. And when we're looking for that offense that's going to make up for it for Bregman and Tucker, He could be providing some of that. It's a lot to ask for a guy that was drafted last summer. It's kind of ridiculous, and there's a version where he just comes up and isn't actually that good. But it seems like they are going to give it a shot sooner rather than later, and I'm excited to see what that looks like. All that said, the cool thing about the Astros and why I am taking the over on 86.5, which is what the over-under is, 86.5, and I'm taking them to win the division. I think this is it. I think this is the last dance. I think they're going to go to the World Series. And I could see this going wrong. I could see this team being bad, but I think this is the last run. I think the pitching is underrated at this point, as much as we're focusing on the offense. And then my last point is Yordan, man. Yordan Alvarez is one of the Yordan Alvarez can say I'm the best hitter on the planet, and you can't be like you're an idiot. He's one of the few guys that can say that. Now he is going to be mostly a DH, so he has to continue to do that to provide that top level value. But he is one of a kind. He is a special, special, special player. And if he's out there, and if he gets, if he can play more, if say we get 140, 150 games from him because he's not, you know, testing those surgically repaired both. He's had surgery on both knees. Remember, if he's spending less time in the outfield, that might be enough to just keep this being an above average offense.
Yordan Alvarez has been a better hitter than Shohei Ohtani since the start of the 2021 season. Now, granted, that's by one point of WRC plus, but the point is he's just as good as Shohei Ohtani as a hitter.
And now, Judge, you know.
Oh, no, and Judge is better.
Judge is better, right. But, you know, Yordan somehow continued. Yordan had a 15% strikeout rate last year.
He's so good.
Hitting the ball as hard as he does. Like, he is unbelievable.
And I'll take the over on the Astros as well. I think they are a wild card team. My divisional rankings.
Yeah.
Let me warm my hands up so I can do the thing.
Okay.
Rangers, Astros, Mariners, A's, Angels. I think this is the easy. This is the one I struggled the least with.
Oh, all right. Because, again, the projections have those top three teams so lumped together and have the Angels and A's so lumped together.
I just have no faith in the team you like
at
all.
That's fine. I'm going Astros, Rangers, Mariners, A's, Angels.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for doing this pod with me. Thank you for doing all these pods with me.
Yes.
Thank you for doing the preview pods with me.
Oh, of course.
Email us, my dear listener friends, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com.
Yes, please do.
Please do. Thank you to Carter Singh for producing.
Yep.
Thank you to Colin Brennan for producing. Thank you to the Yahoo Sports
team.
Because
the Yahoo offices here in New York that set us up in this awesome studio. We had a great time. I'm flying home tomorrow.
Boo.
But the season starts in less than a week. The real season. Sorry, Dodgers.
Whoa.
And Cubs, starts in less than a week.
Is that xenophobic?
And we will be back on Monday. We have some very fun interviews that you will be hearing next week.
Allegedly.
No, it's happening. And we appreciate you listening. Hopefully you enjoyed these previews. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
But put your phone down because Ron Washington says it.